Dziękuję.
Yasya ksha kurute prabodha samaye swadhaname vadvayam tasmai shri guru murtaye namaitam shri lakshina murtaye vijasyantarivam
guru jagatitam pranirvikalpam punaha
Maya Shalpita Desha Kala Kalana Vajitra Chetri Kutam Maya Viva Vijrambhayatya Vimaha Yogi Vayasvechaya Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Rakshina Murtaye Yasyaiva spuranam satatmakamasatkalpatakam pasate Sakshatattvamasiti vedavachasa yobodhayatyashritan Yat sakshatkaranat bhavena punara prithir bhavam bonidau Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Rakshina Murtaye Nara Chitra Ghatodarastita Mahadvipa Prabhabhasvaram Jnanam Yasya Tu Chakshuradhikarana Dvara Vahispandate Jnanamititameva bhantam anubhati tat samastam jagat Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye Deham pranam apindriyanya pichala Buddhim cha shunyam viduh Shri Balanga Jatopamastrahamiti Bhanta Vrishan Vadinah Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Maha Vyamoha Samharine Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Namahidam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
In this verse 5, these vadinaha means these opposing positions, these people, these parts of ourselves that have these opposing positions to what the Shastra is revealing, right? They are bhranta, they are confused, deluded, meaning they're, to really kind of understand the problem, which is a big problem actually. The means of knowledge that we have available to us as individuals, as jiva, really stem from our sense perception and from our mind. Okay, but the mind also is contained within duality. The sense organs are contained within duality. And so we only have available to us knowledge that is rooted within duality. We don't have any means of knowledge to tell us that the creation is cyclical or that the nature of myself is non-objectifiable. How are we going to know that? What means of knowledge do I have that can kind of turn around and look at myself like a mirror? Look at the one who's illumining it. It's really, in terms of epistemologically, my own nature is outside of my means of knowledge, not in terms of self-experience, because I'm self-shining, I'm conscious being. So it's not that I don't have my own self-experiences. I am, I exist. Also, when you go to sleep and wake up, you're not going into non-existence. You'd be scared to death to go to sleep if that were the case. That's not happening. In meditation, you're withdrawing everything. I'm talking about now just with ignorance. You're withdrawing everything and just as much as possible, often in many types of meditation, just abiding as yourself. That's not non-existent. That's not non-experiential. It's just not objectifiable. So you don't know how. You don't have the means of knowledge necessary to contextualize that self-experience. Like, for instance, if I were to ask you, if you didn't have self-knowledge, or you were to go to a teacher and say, who am I? You're not asking about somebody out there, away. It's who, this self that is this me that is before you now, this me that I am. Who am I? Do I survive death? Am I a product of the body? Am I the transmigrating subtle body? Where is that that makes me me? Where is that located? And what is the relationship of this which makes me me to this body, mind, sense organs, and to all of you and to Ishvara? What is that? Am I born? Do I die? What is my relationship to you? This what makes me me. What is it? What makes you you? What is our relationship? And what is my relationship to Ishvara? I don't know. I don't know if my being is limited. I don't know if it's subject to time or not subject to time. No idea. You can have beliefs based on your religion, or you can say something like, well, you know, the Shastra says, the Upanishads say, I am Brahman. I have no idea how that can be, but that's what the Shastra says. So once I become a mumukshu, if you're in India, you'll go to a teacher, you know, who can teach me what that means, that I am Brahman, you know. But that reading that you are Brahman, or just because the Veda says that you are Brahman, doesn't give you knowledge that you are Brahman. It gives you a belief. So that's why sometimes the ones who are Jada or the Vadinahas are the ones who don't know what the Shastra says. They have no idea what the Shastra says. The ones who know what the Shastra says have some Shraddha, and they have a belief, and then they'll go and meet a teacher. But they also don't know. They don't know, not through any fault of your own. You don't know because you don't have the means of knowledge to know. So it's an odd situation because you are that, and you have your own self-experience, but you're always dressed. Your self-experience is always dressed in the lens of the mind, the subtle body, the physical body. It's always wearing that dress, you know? And what's interesting is that even if you had a meditative experience, like a nirvikalpa, you're meditating and somehow your mind turns fully away, its attention fully away from anything that can be objectified, then you have a meditative experience of just me, pure, non-dual being, no universe in the experience, nothing, just my own self. You come back from that experience and the mind knows that is who I am, that is the truth. Now, how can I have that again? Because the ahankara, the I notion, is still totally identified with the mind. And so you've had experiences that you know are true, but you don't know how to get them back, and you are still the mind. You are still the conscious mind that has had this experience of non-duality without any creation or without anything. But it rings so true, it resonates so true for you, but, you know, how can I get that again? Because the ahankara has not made the shift and cannot make the shift from the mind, the self dressed in the mind, to the self. Even though they're one and the same, the self dressed in the mind, you know, is the self. It's not somebody else, you know. So that's the tremendous, tremendous power of Ajnanam, and a certain understanding is hidden in there, and that is that experience does not remove ignorance. Experience does not remove ignorance, you know. Like in some cases it can, in some cases, but it's only in limited, like your experience of sense perception will remove the ignorance of that object, what that you're perceiving. But only of the object you're perceiving, not what the object is or what its place in the creation is. You're just gaining knowledge of that experience through perception, not what the experience is. This is important because when you have a meditative experience, that is a type of pratyeksha. So this is just a little interesting detail. Pratyeksha, when we look at the means of knowledge that we have available to us, pratyeksha means perception, that which gives direct, immediate knowledge through my sensory perception. That's called pratyeksha. It's number one. There's a second type of perception that is called sakshi basya. That means that which is illumined by the sakshi. Okay, so an emotion that you have, that's an experience. How is that known? Sakshi basya. It's illumined by the sakshi. It's illumined by the witness. The atma is called the witness from the standpoint of the mind. So that gives direct, immediate knowledge of the experience of an emotion or the experience of a memory, right? Or even the experience of the I am thought or the experience of a meditative state, any type of meditative state, sakshi basya. Because say your mind is absorbing itself, and as it absorbs itself and becomes very subtle, you know, the experience is going to be changing. And so you can have all different types, all different levels of meditative experiences, all of which are known. Because why? Sakshi basya. It's illumined by the self. Okay? Now when you come back from that experience, there's no ignorance in terms of you that has been removed. What has happened is that you have gained an experience that you didn't have before, perhaps, or a perception that you didn't have before. And now you can describe that perception just in its pure form. Oh, I had this meditative experience, and in that experience there was just like infinite fullness or infinite being. It's so hard to describe, but I know that's the truth. Well, what is that exactly? I don't know, but that's what the experience was. And it is so real and so profound. It's so profound. I need to know what that is. Right? So there's no denial there of the experience. There's just an ignorance of what that experience is. It's exactly the same for yourself. Your being, the self-experience, is here completely, completely, ever-present. I am a conscious being. My being is not ever covered by any emotion or any darkness or any light or by any experience whatsoever. My being illumines and is the very knownness and existence of all experience. That is never covered. You know, it's just like the sun is never covered by the clouds from its own standpoint. From the standpoint of the sun, it just is illumining the clouds. What if it's a dark rainstorm, thunderstorm? It's fine. It's illumining that. It's the same with you. The sun doesn't like become partial or dimmed because of a cloudy sky. It becomes dimmed from your standpoint, looking up at the sun that you can't see because of the clouds. But from the sun's standpoint, nothing is happening. It's not partial. It hasn't been dimmed. And this is exactly true for you. And the thing is where is your ahankara? Where is the I notion? Is the I notion with the mind, which has now been, for instance, overwhelmed by an emotion? I am my mind. I mean, I am my mind-body complex. That's what we come to this knowledge with. So I am my mind. My mind has become overwhelmed with emotion. And so now the dress of my mind that my being is wearing, or the cloud of my mind, we can say, you know, gives me the impression of myself, you know, being very much covered, you know, covered and dimmed. It's as though I have become dark. I have become rainy. I've become thunderous. All of these things from the standpoint of the mind that is overwhelmed by the emotion, right? Because that's its experience. But what if you have differentiated your being from the rain cloud of the mind? Then what you actually experience is a little different. The experience is that your mind has been overwhelmed by the rain cloud of your darkness or your depression. That experience is very much there, exactly as it is for someone who has no knowledge. But that experience is taking place in me. I'm the one who objectifies that experience. Because of me, that experience is known. Because of me, that experience is. And that because there's two orders of reality there. There's me, and then there's this experience that is going to come and go. The me, my own self, is actually, experientially I'm talking, not at all touched or covered by the rain cloud. You might prefer a sunny day, you know, you might prefer that, but the sunny day also doesn't cover you. This is so important. The sunny day means the happy mind, right? It doesn't add to your ananda. It doesn't add to yourself, to your being, to your self-experience. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it more you. It doesn't make it anything. The self, your being, shines, exists in exactly the same way, illumining and being the very adhishtana of the dark mind and being the adhishtana of the light mind. This is the thing that's always missed in Vedanta and is always causing a lot of confusion. Because we're always thinking, like in the cloud example, that, you know, I know the sun is there. So it's a rainy, cloudy day. You're looking at, I know the sun is there, I just can't see it. But I know that because it's there, I'm able, that the light of the sun is able to make me be able to see the clouds, right? I know that, so I know it's there. Yeah. But Swamiji, so Swamiji jokes us, but Swamiji, when are the clouds going to go away so that I can really know myself? When will they stay away instead of just being parted for little time, so that I can really, really appreciate and be myself? Because now I'm only getting to experience myself and be myself once in a while, because there's still so many clouds in my mind. So I only get to be myself once in a while, and I want to be myself all of the time. I want jnana nishtha. I want to be myself all of the time. But what I'm saying is, there should never be any rain clouds. If I'm a jnani, I'm going to be looking directly at the sun as it is in its full orb all of the time. But that's not what's happening, because all of these kind of rain clouds come, you know, and continue to cover me up. So when will I be able to be with myself all the time? Do you see the problem? I need to be with myself. Now, you need to be yourself. You need to be yourself. The one who illumines and is there in exactly the same manner, no matter what the vritti is, no matter what the thought modification is, no matter what the emotion is, your being is not touched and is not covered. That requires viveka. And the viveka is just as tricky for you, and maybe trickier, when you have a sukhavritti. Because then the trap is, when you have a sukhavritti, you know, a happy, clear, shiny vritti, you know, where you feel very comfortable. Ah, that's me. That's who I am, like that. That's me. You like that. You want that, you know. And so then I can take the experience that's being given in the sukhavritti, you know, sukha is joy or positive, the sukhavritti, to be me. And then when the sukhavritti goes, then I'm kind of covered by the neutral vritti or the dark vritti. But the sukhavritti, and there's another problem, and the sukhavritti could actually give me more sukha. It could be, you know, more absorbed, more ananda. I don't think that was as much ananda as myself really is. It could give even more ananda. So this means that myself is the sukha vritti. That's where I'm located, in that vritti. You know, I'm not located in the vritti. I'm the self of that vritti, like I'm the self of every single vritti. So I can say I'm located in that vritti. You can talk like that. As long as you can say, I am located in every vritti. I'm the self of that vritti. Let me have those vritti so I can see myself. No, you have to be able to see, I am the self in every vritti. I am the self in every experience. Not because I know that all of the vrittis are being illumined by me, and therefore, since they're seen and known, therefore, I know that I'm the self of every vritti. No. Your being does not require a vritti to be known. You're self-evident. And so what we mean by that is your being needs to be differentiated from every objectifiable experience. Your being, you are self-evident. The vrittis, no vritti is giving you your self-experience. No vritti. What gives you your self-experience is yourself. That's what gives you your self-experience. As we understand further, every vritti, like, say, a vritti of a tree, the self-experience of that tree, the being of that tree, the knownness of that tree, is yourself. Of a cloud, the being of that cloud, the knownness of that cloud, is yourself. You get rid of the cloud, you get rid of the tree, you get rid of the whole creation, and the knownness being still remains absolutely untouched. And so that's what we need to recognize, and no means of knowledge within the creation is going to give me that recognition that I have built in. No built-in means of knowledge is going to give me that recognition. All the built-in means of knowledge, like my sense perception and my mind and inference and presumption, and all the means of knowledge I have that are all really dependent on sense perception, can't give me the knowledge of that which actually illumines all of them and is the self of all of them. The one that allows them the consciousness which all of them enjoy, that's not something that they can turn around and illumine. Because the luminary only is the consciousness. You can't get behind it. And no luminary can get behind, or no means of knowledge can get behind consciousness, my being, to light it up. And so these means of knowledge that people are using and all of these techniques that we have in duality just simply don't deliver. They don't deliver the goods at all. And because of that, unless you have a pramana, whether it's the Vedanta pramana or it's in another pramana, in another tradition that functions in the same way, holds up a mirror to your being, you know, to reveal the self-evident, to reveal, to strip away all of the things that have, all of the baggage that's been loaded on it, you know, unless there's the pramana is there that can do that, you're precluded from self-knowledge. and you stay within the wraps of duality. And so that's why all of these different vadis, all of these different philosophical discussions or these philosophical positions fall flat. They fall flat because their means of knowledge keep them within duality because they're not able to go beyond duality. Maybe the Buddha was one of the best in these darshanas because he realized that the means of knowledge that we have cannot take us to what is an absolute shunyata, which is an absolute emptiness. The means of knowledge that we have can't take us there, and therefore, even if you ask me, he'll say, even if you ask me any questions about that, I'm not going to answer it. Because there's no way for you to know it. If he were to say it in a Vedantic way, it's who you are, but who you are is not going to be objectified by any means of knowledge that you have. And so when you say the word self, you're only talking about this body, mind, sense, organs, or something that exists within this creation. You have no means of knowledge to recognize that which is not objectifiable. You see what I mean? So he said, no, I won't talk about it, and I don't accept the Vedas as a pramana, so I won't talk about the nature of the creation or the cyclical nature of the creation or heavens or hells or anything like that. I don't talk about it. And it's not necessary for you anyway, you know? So he was at least very aware of the limitations of the pramanas, the means of knowledge we have available to us. So in the Mandukya Upanishad, you'll see Gaudapada having all of these, especially, you know, the Sankhya and Bauda. He will bring them up to dismiss them because even the Bauda itself does not have the means of knowledge necessary to recognize my nature. It's something that you have to, it has to kind of come to you. You won't call it the self, but you know that there's something, ground of being that's shunyata, that's totally empty. You know something like that. But you still can't get there. But he will have all of these different darshanas argue with themselves. He lets everybody argue with themselves, with each other. And he writes all about it. He has the Sankhya argue with the Bauddha and the Vaisheshika. They're all arguing back and forth, negating each other. So he lets those arguments and negating each other take place until everybody's dead. Okay? Everybody's been negated by everybody else. He says, yes, that's fine. Okay, now, they've done all of the work. They've proven to each other that none of these positions can withstand inquiry because they're all bound within time and space. And so no matter how hard, how much they struggle, they're not going to get to where they need to go. And so then he uses this example. That's why he's bringing in this vadinaha, vadi, because these are philosophical positions that people have taken and they're committed to them. You know, and since they're committed to them, they stand firm. And so then to stand firm, then somebody has to come and stand firm, so to speak, against them. And that's where we get this Purvapaksha Siddhanta and this kind of debate going on. But then he says, all of these people, no matter what, they're identifying the Atma as either non-existent or flicker-flicker consciousness, because that's an experience. Your mind is a conscious mind and it's thought after thought after thought. Or they're identifying it with an upadi. Because what else are they going to do? It's not there, or it's consciousness which is continually changing, you know, or it's identified with an upadi, like your body or your prana or your sense organs. That's what they do. And then he makes his little mean little statement that says, just like women, children, you know, the dullards, people who are blind, but you know, yeah, all women are always included. And children, those are the main ones, women and children. You know, like women and children, they don't understand anything. That's the idea. I want to explain this, okay? It's like saying, say if we include men, say if we, see women, in India especially, women are looked at the people who really take care of the family, They take care of the children. They take care of the household. They provide a home. They're relational. They take care of the... They love. You know, they provide the love and warmth. They're the hearth, like the hearth of the home. And they're very much revered for that. And so, but they're also viewed as being very attached. No vairagya. They're very attached to their children and to their family, and their whole vision is outward, you know, to take care and to make a home for their family. And so they're so busy with that, they never even think about more philosophical things, you know. But, you know, it's also, you say about children, you know, just too involved with their play and, you know, fooling around and having a good time. They're too young to really even care about these kind of things. And blind people have enough to deal with, you know. And then, and then if you have a damaged IQ, say if you have some very low type of, if you're very dull-witted, then also your mind isn't available, you know. It doesn't even go there. So there's all these types of people. But these are all caricatures. We could make caricatures out of men, too, you know. Like it's a caricature to think that all men are, you know, philosophical and really looking inward, you know, to try to figure out what is really the reality here. So men have no interest in that whatsoever. They have interest in, you know, making a name for themselves and, you know, being strong, virile lovers that all the women look up to. And they have their different things. They have all of their different needs. Some men. Maybe you can even categorize a majority of men of being like this and like this and like this. They have no interest in Vedanta or in really looking into themselves. You can say the same thing about women. Women, they're too busy taking care of their children. They're too busy, you know, cleaning house and cooking. They have no interest in these kind of things. It's a caricature. You can even say that about children. Some children are so absolutely brilliant, you know. They don't care about, they're not running around playing with this and that and this and that, or they are playing with this and that and this and that, and they're also in self-inquiring. And they're in the minority. They're in the minority for children. They're in the minority for women. And they're in the minority for men, you know. And so to just pick on women is not really, it's just silly. It's silly, you know. But we have to just say, okay, whatever they do, it's okay. And you have to pick on blind people. Blind people also get knowledge. The dull-witted, probably not, because their mind isn't available. That's different. They don't have the... If the buddhi is not functioning, you know, or functioning only at the most minimal level, then that, in this lifetime, they're probably not meant to get knowledge. But if they're dull-witted from somebody's perspective, but maybe not from the guru's perspective, because they see he may be dull-witted, but, you know, he also looks inward. He also really wants to know. You know? What if a teacher says, "This, you may call him dull-witted, but he's got something else. He's got something else." So you can't just categorize people like this. Just take these things as a caricature, you know. And I would say that most everybody, whether they're man, woman, or child, basically has no interest in this knowledge. This is they're not supposed to. This is the gaining this knowledge is the end game. It's the end game. It's after, like, say if you look at the whole life, we've been here, just think about this, from the Shastric position, we have been here from beginningless time. We have been here for a really long time, okay? We have had so many births as men, as women, as animals, as plants, all depending upon our karma. We've been through so many, many different births. And now finally here we are at this birth, at an infinite beginningless birth. We have up to this point accumulated enough punya, according to the Shastra, enough have lived a life of Dharma, enough, so that our mind, whether you're a man or a woman or a child that has old enough to use their buddhi, you know, you have accumulated enough Dharma to have the shanti, the shanti, and the grace, Ishwara Anugraha, Bhagavan's grace, to be a mumukshu. To be a mumukshu is considered very, very, very rare. It's just a handful of people in the world. What happened? Like 8 billion people in the world. And how many mumukshus? Very, very few, relative to the 8 billion people that are here. Very few. That's why. Because your sense organs are all going outward. What's going to make you stop and say, yeah, but what's really going on? Who am I really? Because yourself is always taken care of. You're the student. You're the teacher. You're the mother. You're the father. You're the friend. You're the girlfriend. You're the employer. You're the employee. You know? You're healthy. You're sick. You're young. You're old. Always the ahankara has something to land on immediately. So you never have to ask that question, the who am I question. It's always being answered for you relatively, you know. You ask somebody who's not a mumukshu, like when my mom, I've told you the story before, I asked her when she wanted to know how my trip to was India, I told her a little too much. And she just went, and she's a very kind, was very gentle, loving person, but, you know, she really didn't want to hear it. And what she said is, oh, honey, I don't have those kind of problems. That's a psychological problem that you have, and I'm glad it's being taken care of. She wouldn't even say that would be way more than she would say. But she had no, there was nothing in her that called, and she was religious, she believed in God and all of that. There was nothing that in her that asked that question, you know. That's a very, very rare question to ask. That's why in the Shastra, you know, the mumukshus are honored. There's you know, verses extolling the preciousness of the mumukshu and the preciousness of the guru, of the whole guru-sisha relationship, that it even exists at all, you know. So to kind of, it's fun to kind of caricature, you know, but if you take that type of caricature seriously, it's not true. And it's degrading. It's that with the woman's upadhi is something which is not capable of gaining knowledge because it's an inferior upadhi. You know, a little child's upadhi at this age is just an inferior upadhi. It's not able to gain knowledge. That is not true. It's not true. There's even, you know, there's women in the Upanishads who are jnanis, who have gained knowledge, who have been taught. So you have to take these things as caricatures and also look at the qualities that they're talking about, you know. Like, if I'm so attached to my to my family and to my life or to my job, you know, or to my money or to anything where that becomes what is primary for me, then yeah, probably there's not any room in there, you know, to ask that question. Because what I want, what I desire is so much directed outward. You know, so if you're saying that happens more in women than in men, okay, in a certain sphere. Maybe for women it happens more in reference to their children and to the home and to the relational qualities of life. But it happens more for men in terms of their power needs and their needs for accomplishment and their needs for gaining money and their needs for being the alpha male, you know. And they also have that strong drive that stops them from having that mumukshutvam. So when you see these things about the Sri and Bala and all of these things, you cannot take this seriously as something which is denigrating the nature of women or the nature of men. That is really unfortunate. And sometimes small people do that where they need to make themselves be, you know, more manly and more important in the society. That's all. It's just silly. It's all just silly. Most men don't do that. I was reading Swami Vidhitatmananda's. He's written this Dakshinamurti book that I read, and Giuseppe is making this translation of. You know, you got to read his commentary. He feels so embarrassed. There are many women in the Upanishads. You know, he says all kinds of things to make up for this. Because they feel bad. So anyway, I said my piece on it. It's just because it comes enough. You know, so I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to put that type of categorization on men or women. It's just not true. It's that very few people are mumukshus. That's actually the truth. And you know what it says in the first sutra of the Brahma Sutras? The Brahma Sutras is a analysis written with a commentary written by Shankara. It's written in sutra form. It's analysis of all of the Upanishads, every word that has been used that could be mistaken, every concept that could be mistaken in this way or that. It's negating all of the different darshans. It's like the last text that is studied. And so the very first sutra is Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now then, the desire to study Brahman. Right? The desire to know Brahman. Now then, after you've been through all of this, now you are an adhikari, a qualified student to study this knowledge, to have a desire, that mumukta jignasa, the desire to know. Now then, the desire to know Brahman. So in that commentary of Shankara, he goes through a couple of paragraphs on who actually is the qualified student to gain this knowledge. What are the qualifications? What makes you qualified to gain this knowledge? Is it because you're a brahmana, like many in India? Many will think you have to be a man, but not just any man. You have to be a brahmana. That makes you qualified. And so there's all of these kind of stipulations, but you know what it says in the Brahma Sutras? What qualifies you to study this knowledge is the mumukshutvam, period. No matter where you come from on this earth, it says all of this, wherever you come from, whatever caste you are, whether you're a man, woman, child, whether you're a mlecha means you're outside of the fold, the Vedic fold, you are the mumukshutvam. We don't care about any of that. It's that mumukshutvam. If you are mumukshutvam, if you have that mumuksha, that desire for liberation, you know, then you are qualified for this knowledge. So that's the truth of it. And it's also throughout the Vedas and the Upanishads that there are very few people that are mumukshas. You know, so whatever gender you are, or wherever you come from, if you're a Hindu or you're a Westerner or you're from Africa or wherever you're from, it really is irrelevant. The point of relevancy is your desire for this knowledge. So that's a beautiful thing. So now on the third line, after saying the Sri Bala Anda, he says, Maya Shakti Vilasa Kalpita Mahavya Moha Samharine Tasmai Sri Guru Murtiye. Salutations to Dakshinamurti, who's now in the form of my teacher. Who is the one who samharine, samyak harine, who completely destroys, who completely removes the vya moha, this great confusion, this great maha is great, this maha vya moha, this great confusion that is kalpita, created by maya shakti vilasa, which is created by the play of maya, by the manifestation of the power of maya, right? So let me explain that a little bit. We say that from the standpoint of Ishvara, or from the standpoint of Brahman, just the self, the Maya Upadi, the Maya itself is complete, just the Maya. So Brahman plus Maya, Maya manifests as the entire creation, everything that exists within time and space. So we say with that Maya has, from the standpoint of Ishvara, the Shakti that is called Vikshepa. It has Vikshepa Shakti. Vikshepa Shakti is the power to project, right? So the power for Maya to manifest, that's the Vikshepa Shakti. But now say, so that's Ishvara. There's no Ajnanam there. There's just this Maya capacity, the Shakti, that manifests as the creation. So that Shakti that allows for the manifestation is called Vikshepa Shakti. Okay? But now the manifestation is there, and included in that manifestation are all of the jivas, all of the sukshma shariras, all of the beings that have minds. Even animals, plants, all beings that have minds. But now we're concerned mostly with human beings. So look at all of the human beings, all of which have minds, all of which enjoy consciousness, right? But they enjoy consciousness illumining the mind, which is not the whole creation, but is limited, has limited knowledge just by its nature. And so what is just Vikshepa Shakti for Ishvara is both Vikshepa Shakti and Avarana Shakti for the jiva. The Avarana Shakti is the covering. It covers naturally because that's the Ajnanam. So the Maya Upadi is Ajnanam, brings about the Ajnanam for the jiva, because your means of knowledge are limited to your mind and your sense organs. And so and the mind and the sense organs, as they say in the Katha Upanishad, it just looks outward. So Bhagavan made a mistake. So Bhagavan didn't think of this. He made the mind and the sense organs just looking outward. And so your knowledge is very much limited by time and space. And you have no means of knowledge to know yourself or to differentiate yourself from your body, mind, sense organs. And so through the sense of touch, which is a sense organ, it pervades this whole body. And so your sense organs are located in your head, in your body, right? And you're looking out through your body. So who am I, this conscious being? I'm this body. Because I don't have an identity with the whole creation. I'm embodied within the creation. That's my experience. So what Ishvara is not embodied. That's an important thing to see. Ishvara is not embodied. He's not experiencing the creation through sense perception, through a mind looking around. If you think of the dream, when you have a dream, you're not embodied in the dream because you're not identified with a character in the dream. Then you're the Ishvara of the dream, right? The whole dream. Your being is the whole dream. But if you're identified with a character in the dream, you're embodied, right? And so then you experience the dream within it. So then you're a limited creature, limited person in the dream. I thought of a good meditation that we to do. I'm going to tell you now so that I hope I remember to do it tomorrow. This is the meditation. Right? You just sit with your eyes closed, just relaxing, or eyes open, or eyes closed. And you just imagine yourself having all of the five sense organs except for one. Except for the sense of touch. The sense of touch is a sense organ. Everything changes. If you didn't have the sense organ, a sense of touch running through your body, claiming it as you, because illumining this body in particular as the conscious being, what if you didn't have the sense of touch? You know, then all of the sounds you hear, you know, all of the things that you see, nothing is embodied. Right, that's a really interesting. I tried it myself. It's a very interesting meditation. We are really tied tightly into this body just through the sense of touch. It's interesting, because without that, your being is not embodied anyway. But you just start to recognize that if you kind of eliminate the sense of touch, my being's not embodied at all. Consciousness is not embodied. It's not unembodied, it's not embodied. It just simply is, non-dual. And then you recognize this really becomes Maya when it's not rooted in the body. So it's an interesting meditation to do. So here what he says is, oh, there's all of this ajnanam, you know, that you're suffering from just by the mere fact of having a body. So, and having a body and being tied to your sense perception and your limited mind, you really have no way of knowing that you are the self of the whole creation. Not only are you the self of the whole creation, but the whole creation is mithya and has you for its being. What means of knowledge do you have for that? So my salutations to Bhagavan, to Dakshinamurti, now in the form of my guru, who completely, completely, fully, samharine, removes this maha-vyamoha, this vast, great confusion, which is brought about by Ishwara's maya. Ishwara has no problem, just vikshepa-shakti. It just projects. It's all me, it all exists in me, nothing happens to me. There's no jnanam at all. Okay. But for everyone in that projection, it's like I am me and you are you and you are you, and I'm suffering from birth and death, and sometimes I experience happiness, and I experience happiness mostly when I fulfill a desire. So I should fulfill all of my desires, but then when I fulfill a desire, there's so many problems that come in the way. Samsara. I just naturally bound by samsara until you become a mumukshu and you say that it's got to be a way out of this. This isn't right. This isn't right. Who am I? What is really going on here? Who is God? Why am I here? And you become a mumukshu. When you become a mumukshu, you meet your teacher. When you meet your teacher, this problem is samyakarine, completely removed. My salutations to Bhagavan, who removes that samsara. So, okay. There's that verse. We'll chant this number 6, even though our time's up, just so we can go into it next week. I mean, next week. I'm used to teaching every week, every Thursday, every Sunday. Our next week is in a few hours.
Rahu grasta divakarendu sadrsho
Maya samachadana
Maya samachadana
Sanmatrah karanopasamharanato
Sanmatrah karanopasamharanato
Yo
bhutsu shuptah puman
Praga swapsamiti praboda samaye
Praga swapsamiti praboda samaye
Yav pratyabhijñāyate
Yav pratyabhijñāyate
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam
Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Give a few minutes. I'm going to break the sandhi on this for you, okay? Rahu Grasta Divakara Indu Sadrishaha Maya Samachadanat Sanmatraha Karana Upasamharanataha Yaha Abhut Sushuptaha Puman Prak Aswapsam Iti Prabodha Samaye Yaha Pratyabhijñāyate Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
We'll see that one in the morning.
Tatah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantih Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om